something is trying to get inside my body,
and you want to sleep with me.
We can't go to camp without our physicals now, can we?
La plume de ma tante.
I take great relish in savoring each separate horror. I roll them over on my tongue.
Don't, Lord Byron. Don't remind me of it tonight.
Sometimes I have wondered whether life wouldn't be much more amusing if we were all devils.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you.
Welcome to Screaming Queens, the Queer Horror Podcast. I'm Jonathan Larkin, I'm joined by Stephen Moore, Jonathan Butler and Martin Fennerty. This is the second part of our podcast looking at those films that everybody seems to love but you just don't really like. In fact, you hate them. In part one, we looked at The Shining and The Exorcist. And this is our second part looking at Bram Stoker's Dracula and Cabin in the Woods.
You okay?
You had some tonic.
Oh, sorry. I've given Stephen too much gin. I'm just going
to
get him.
It's a very rare thing to say, but
first world problems.
Lightweight.
It's sharp.
I got too drunk on the Nightmare on Elm Street one, and don't need that happening again.
You can never be too drunk, Stephen. Not with your quips.
I can't see them through those jeans.
Thank you.
So, Dracula?
So, yeah. Next up, we're talking about Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's.
Bram Stoker's?
Oh, yeah.
The elongated.
That's a bum house. That's a bum
house. Bram Stoker's Dracula. Annie Lennox is Dracula.
I know this is Dracula. Bram Stoker's. Can't say it now. Bram Stoker's Dracula. Some would say it is a bumhouse film, and I certainly would. So, though this might not be an obvious critically acclaimed film, it's a very, very popular film, and lots of people seem to like it. And the last time I saw it on television, on Film 4, it was positioned as a classic film and a film that was unmissable and people should watch it.
Yeah.
And I've never ever got it. So the premise of the film is that obviously it's based on Bram Stoker's novel, Dracula. It weaves in, I think by reputation, some other versions of the Dracula legend and bits and pieces of it. So it starts in medieval Transylvania with the Count Dracul fighting the Turks and invading Christian Europe. He's taken away from his home, from his castle, leaving his young wife. He defeats the Turks very bloodily, impaling them on spears in the battlefield. There's some great shots in that first 10 minutes. People sliding down spears in silhouette.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
And he starts to return home, having defeated the Turks, to be reunited with his young bride. She, however, is at his castle, which is besieged by the Turks, and assumes that he's lost the battle and throws herself wonderfully, wonderfully camply off the parapet of the castle down into the ravine and the river below. And Count Dracul comes back to find that she's dead and is devastated, and renounces God and his faith because he's fought for God, and this is what his reward is that his wife has killed herself. He renounces his faith to a very dramatic, bloody conclusion. And at that point, that is where the film's success possibly takes a break.
For the rest of the film.
Quite an extended break.
Here occurred the frightening and shocking history of Prince Dracula and the woman he loved.
I have crossed oceans of time to find you.
Yeah. Dracula.
There's a sinister, darker side to him. I find irresistible. I have never
never met any man with such a passion for life. He is unlike any man. What are you?
Vampires do exist. This one we fight, this one we face. Can take on many forms. He is both young and old. He can appear as mist, as vapor, as the fog. And he can vanish at will.
Oh, my love.
The power of his evil desire has no end.
You've got to go to him. And you've got to love him.
She is a willing recruit and devoted disciple. She is the devil's concubine. Daughter!
Join me in eternal life. Your salvation is his destruction.
I want to be what you are. I want to see what you see. I want to love what you love. Take me away from all this death.
Or we move forward to Victorian England, 1890s England, where a firm of solicitors is acting on behalf of Count Dracula, who is now something like 500 odd years old and is buying property in London, and has sent back one of the employers of the solicitors who's gone mad because he's become under the spell of Dracula. So they need somebody else to go out to Transylvania to finish off the work and get him to sign the deeds to all this property he's bought in London. And the handsome young surf dude, Christopher Harker.
Jonathan Harker.
That's one less is dispatched over there, who's played by Keanu Reeves.
Hilariously.
Attempted to be played by
And Keanu plays Jonathan with an English accent that is possibly the worst English accent, even more so than Dick Van Dyke's in Mary Poppins. It's unredeemable.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's lost his greedy mind, poor chap. I want you to take over for his foreign client, this rather eccentric Count Dracula. He's buying a property around London.
Of course, sir. I'll attend to the Count. Thank you for your confidence.
This is a great opportunity for you, Harker. But you'll have to leave Transylvania immediately. Opportunities such as this come but once in a lifetime.
Yes, of course, sir. I've seen many strange things already. Bloody wolves chasing me through some blue inferno.
And there begins a hugely laboured, stilted, clumsy execution of a story which actually, I think if you try and read the original novel, it's actually not very accessible anyway to a modern reader. Lots of 19th century literature is, and it's actually quite easy to read, but there is something very dense about Bram Stoker's novel. Managed to say it correctly then. I've written copious notes about this film. For a film that's been produced by such an acclaimed director, somebody who's so talented, it's an absolutely dreadful film, and I think it's Hollywood trying to execute a period drama and a literary drama without any knowledge of literature or history. Mm-hmm. And any appreciation of it, and so it does it in a completely completely almost an anachronistic way. Mm. In many ways
it's just lazy. It's assuming that the audience are too thick to realise that this film's actually shit. it's like they're saying, if we make these pretty cool big stars put on these quite terrible clothes, do these terrible British accents, then the audience will assume that it's a classy film.
It's
And the audience did.
And the there's huge inconsistencies, not within characters, and particularly the female characters. Winona Ryder, who plays Mina, who is Jonathan Hawkins' fiance, and actually is a lookalike of Count Dracula's wife. And Sadie Frost, who plays her her friend Lucy Westenra, they're meant to be two young Victorian ladies who are very prim and staid, and yet they are that, and they're very restrained in one way, and yet they behave like the coarsest.
Yeah.
In some ways, in another context, would be absolutely wonderful, but the coarsest, trashiest East End whores imaginable.
Lucy is all about the day.
Absolutely all about the day.
Lucy in the novel is a little bit like female because she's like daring to think about two different men, but like that's the most rebellious thing because she's slightly getting infatuated with two men.
Yeah.
In this, she's a slut.
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, she walks through that party at the beginning and plays three different men off each other. And I'm just like, whoa.
And I think that's part of its problem, is that it doesn't have any intent. It tries to make great play of the fact that it's very historically accurate and manages to be wildly inaccurate. That actually, if it had been in more skillful hands, you could have had the innocence and sensitivity of that time, of the attitudes of the time of a woman actually having interest in two different men and very lightly and playfully flirting with them, and that being that being intensely erotic in many ways. Whereas Francis Ford Coppola just went straight out for the D.
Yeah.
And the ass, actually. Erotic Arabian Nights with anal sex, pictures of anal sex, and absolutely. Yeah,
and she thinks
bizarre.
It's disgusting at one point, and then her phone shows up, and then all of a sudden they're giggling over it, like, ha ha ha.
And I did it last night.
Yeah.
It's very, it is an incredibly lazy film, and it's incredibly lazy in its attitude. I think you're right, in its attitude towards the audience, because it almost plays to a stereotypical LA audience who have no interest in anything other than LA, and so like this fantasy cartoon version of Victorian England and Victorian literature, and think that that's intellectual.
Yeah, it's no Penny Dreadful.
It's no Penny Dreadful, and I think Penny Dreadful's all the best because it doesn't play around with that. It's actually very it has a lot of integrity to it.
Yeah, Lucy's got no morals at all. She shags a dog. I mean, I know he's a werewolf, but you know.
The film lacks a lot. I actually don't think. This is the one film that I will say that I didn't feel like it was horror at all. It felt like a period drama more than... That was first and foremost what this film was. Period drama. But whereas like Dracula to me is gothic. Everything should be grandiose and Spider-Man be gothic kind of thing. It felt like a really clean Hollywood version of it.
Yeah, and
there was
also,
no spiderwebs and there's arches. It was just...
You can't do... It's very hard to get gothic and colourful in the same thing.
Yeah,
and I think they oversaturated it so much with all of these crazy colours that it just took away from the gothic horror and made it more fantasy.
Yeah, and the armour at the very beginning with that Count Dracula wears, it just reminded me of something of Dungeons and Dragons, like those ridiculous over the top armours that you get when you like,
well, the silhouette battle is like Lords of the Rings, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the opening of Fellowship of the Ring. Similar.
It's a serious film that reads like a parody, but it's serious and it takes itself too seriously, and it doesn't even do that well enough to be Showgirls. it's actually just an appalling film, and it's so convoluted, and it tries to shove in so much imagery and so many themes. It almost wants you to drown you in all of that, and actually becomes almost. It always comes in unintelligible at times.
Yeah.
And actually, they could have actually just stripped it down and made it a much simpler film. And it's interesting that it won 3 Oscars and all of them are technical, because it's a very lavishly filmed experience and the colours and things are really amazing and the effects are really amazing, and I can understand why it won Oscars for those things, because actually I think that's done really, really well. But it notably didn't win any Oscars for acting, directing or writing. It then does, I think, redeem itself in the last 10 minutes. It's almost like the first 10 minutes are good and the last 10 minutes are good. The reunion or the supposed reunion between Mina and Dracula, Mina suddenly realising that she's his wife or has that love and connection for him, is actually really good in the, at the very end, just watching it recently for the podcast. Yeah. It actually, that bit's actually quite convincing. And there's a line that I think it's something like, our love is stronger than death. And you're almost convinced in those 10 minutes, actually, their love really is stronger than death. Regardless of all the superfluous nonsense of the preceding hour and 50 minutes,
yeah,
it's all completely irrelevant. The first 10 minutes are great, and the last 10 minutes are great. And you've endured all of that time in the meantime. But that payoff is really, really convincing, and it's such a shame that there's that huge dollop of shit in there.
Well, what you've got there, though, are Winona Ryder and Gary Oldman, who, I think he's a terrible, terrible over actor, but he's a good actor, but he's still an actor. And I think what you've got with those two elements is just those two good actors who are giving it their all. And they've got quite good material, like quite good heartfelt material. Whereas in the middle, that's when it becomes style over substance. And you've got Dracula with the two big tit-looking bouffants on his head. He looks like Kim and Aggie. He looks like Kim from Kim and Aggie with the big blonde hair.
Or two tumours on top of his head.
Two titty tumours on his head. You know, and then he's suddenly a steampunk.
Yeah,
with this John Lennon glasses,
and the shadow starts moving behind him.
Maybe
really camp manner.
Very camp.
Maybe it's convincing the last 10 minutes is because actually Dracula is dying, and he's being killed. So actually, Gary Oldman doesn't have that much to do.
Yeah,
he actually has to be quite.
But she does, and she's a really underrated actress, Winona Ryder.
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah. But I actually love Gary Oldman.
No, I think he's good, but I think he overacts.
I actually thought he was quite okay in this.
Yeah.
Compared to everything else, I think he just made everyone else look stupid because he was.
Yeah. It's not typical. So if you've got Keanu Reeves,
Keanu Reeves.
And Anthony Hopkins is he's basically a comedy character in that film, isn't he?
Well, he just plays a German version of every character he plays as standard.
Yeah.
He's actually not that great of an actor. If you look at his body of work, that he's got one or two films that are
he's good as Hannibal. He's good
as
Hannibal.
As Hannibal.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he's amazing.
Yeah.
But then he really got that role because he was really out of favour with everyone. Everyone stopped booking him. He was really bad.
Yeah.
And then he had to force the director to take, or the writer, one of them.
Yeah.
Had to force the other person into accepting him because he really didn't want him because he was that bad.
Yeah.
He stole the show.
He had an alcohol problem, didn't he? He was an alcoholic. And so he'd actually ruined his career, I think, to that extent because of his drink problem. But hadn't he done Remains of the Day just before?
I think so, yeah.
Then, and that probably rehabilitated his reputation to some extent.
I think, it was around then. But yeah, he's ridiculous in it. Everyone in it is
I think that for such a skilled director to get such appalling performances out of every single person, which degrades everybody, that's quite an achievement.
It's got its camp stripes, it's got its gay stripes because the beautiful Billy Campbell is in the cast as Quincy, and he was Luke in Dynasty, the most gorgeous man in the world, and he was also lovely John in Tales of the City.
Yeah.
He always played gay parts.
And the other redeeming feature, of course, which is flawless, is Annie Lennox's Song for a Vampire at the end.
Yeah, better than the whole film.
Which is better than the whole film. And it's a hugely camp, romantic romp, actually, in a lot of ways. Overly dramatic, wonderful Annie Lennox moment. And it's almost lost because it's not even actually over any part of the film. It's at the end of the end credits. So you'd have missed it if you'd walked out the cinema.
I was going to say, I don't remember the song at all, so...
Mm. It's
really over the top, but it's really nice as well.
Oh,
the most successful adaptations of Dracula are the films that simplified it. Like the Hammer version is the ultimate version for me. And that halves the book. You know, it takes loads of it out because they knew their limitations. So they wrote a bloody good script to make up for those limitations.
The book is essentially found footage, but like for book area.
Well, yeah. It was very self-indulgent. Francis Ford Coppola basically had a wank for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I think he spent so much time on the technical aspects of it that the actual acting got away from him. The actors just got away from him because he spent that much time with, oh, I've got to do this really intricate shot here and I've got to build these models and this has got to look great.
Six of gangsters, Francis.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote most of Star Wars as well.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
He owed Lucasfilm a script and I said, I'll take a look at Star Wars for you. So most of what ended up as Star Wars was due to Francis Ford Coppola.
Okay. And he produced... He produced Jeepers Creepers and Jeepers Creepers 2.
Okay, I'll let him off.
So he's got an interest in horror, hasn't he? But I think
he was involved in Sleepy Hollow as well. I think he was producer on Sleepy Hollow. The Tim Burton one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, so we're quite united in
hatred of
Dracula.
That's the period drama that classes itself as horror.
Yeah. Oh, well, sorry about that, Dracula.
And now Stephen's going to try and zip his mouth shut. Texas
oh, sweet revenge, right? Captain the Woods, John. Tell us about Cabin in the Woods. Sum it up.
I just remember being really offended by it when I saw it. For me, it's just... The impression I get from it, it was trying to like play with the tropes of the horror genre. It's like, oh, we're taking these tropes and we're changing them and we're making it all different and we're changing the game and it's all different. And it's like, all you do is fall into the same tropes. You fall into the same traps that you're trying to dispel. And I just can't. I can't even...
Looking for what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
A lot of the good press, I think, is just from Whedon. Joss Whedon. He's attached as an executive producer. Because he didn't have to direct it. It was Drew Goddard, wasn't he?
He wrote it with Drew Goddard. But then Drew Goddard is also Buffy, so...
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not just attacking Joss Whedon because, obviously, you know, Buffy was great and he has done a lot of good stuff, but... Think so much of it now is just his cult of personality. Is just you get the Weed Nights going on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, 100%. We'll give it 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say I'm not one.
I really don't think it deserves it.
It's quite funny. I mean, I think it's got a good witty script going on, but I think I'd remembered it better than it was, and that's because I'm a big Buffy fan with it, and I love Joss Whedon's stuff. That he did for that, and I think I sort of romanticised it in my head and remembered it as being like a really good Buffy episode, and a lot of it is, but I think it's a bit arrogant.
That's what I was about to say. This is the arrogance.
That
too.
First 5 minutes, I'm like, what the
I love the opening scene.
I just don't see the point.
The cold opening scene with just them two discussing like random crap, and then it just flashes up with the cabin in the woods.
But that to me is arrogant and pretentious. Yeah, it's like saying, look how funny we are, we don't need to have a horror
scene. Well, I am arrogant and pretentious because I love it.
No, you know. But it's like the way the film starts, they didn't need it. If you
I
just start
it was more arrogant.
Yeah, no, see, I thought that was funny because by that point I do like the last half of the film more. By that point I was more invested in those two characters and I thought, oh, it's funny, and I love the whole it's a shame. It's quite funny when they say the gods are coming and they're going to destroy the world and stuff, and they say, I'd quite like to have seen that. You know, and I think that's quite a human thing to say. So I prefer the ending to the beginning.
I like the passing of the dream while they're having this very serious discussion.
And I like what it does with the horror tropes. I think it's quite sweet. If you watched it without the beginning, without that sort of arrogant opening, I think it'd look like it was more of a homage to those horror tropes, but in a way it's like it's laughing at them.
Yeah,
it's laughing at them, but it's still relying on them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm turning it down, but it's propping me up at the same time.
It's a bit like the Scream sequels, you know what I mean? When they started getting, they got too snippy about the horror genre, but actually, you're a horror film, you know, and you shouldn't be disrespecting it that much.
I don't think it's disrespectful, though. I think they're making fun of it in the same way that we'll comment about things that are wrong with horror films. I think they're just pointing out the obvious.
I don't think it is. Because the film that they've made uses... When you see that scene where it's panning down, you see all the monsters and you see like a fake pinhead and the twins from The Shining and saying, you know, this is our foundation, this is what we're built on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're saying, but really, this is this is doing it because we're like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a very backhanded film. I think it's
I think that's your interpretation of it.
I don't think it is.
Whereas you see it as like a backhanded recreate that I see as an homage to them. It's not saying we created it, it's saying we're not the original film. It's like we're just addressing that all these things happened.
No, but that's what the point of the film is, saying that these tropes are this way because of this, because
but
this
not
is
because
what
of this
happen.
Film but because of this
the gods,
this overriding
yeah.
story. It's not the film that is the overriding thing, it's the gods underneath that is the overriding issue.
But that's the film that you're watching Cavern of the Woods,
yeah.
and this is the film that's telling you that story.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't think it's like trying to take the piss. I think it's appreciating.
I don't understand. You're celebrating?
Well, they're celebrating. I'm drinking.
But she's still alive. How can the ritual be complete?
The virgin's death is optional as long as it's last. Main thing is that she, suffers.
That she did.
It's so strange. I'm actually brooding for this girl. She's got so much heart. You think of all the pain and the
tequila is my lady! My lady! Come on in, guys! Come on in! You're welcome! Tequila! From darkness, there is light!
And I love, that scene with the lifts all open.
That's 200. The minute they go underground, it's the initiative, that's what I'll call it.
Yeah.
That is my favourite bit, because it becomes a roller coaster ride of what's going to jump out next, and you can switch your brain off and you can just be like, oh, this is fun, and it's not trying to be overly clever. Sometimes I just want to enjoy a horror film for what it is, and it's a similar issue that I've got with the Scream franchise as well. It's like, all right, we get it, you're clever and you're witty and you've putting a sort of spin on the horror genre, but at the end of the day, people will always just go back to wanting to watch the horror films that you're making fun of or remaking. I don't know, it wears a bit thin for me in the end.
I see, I think it is, it's the playfulness of it. I want to go back to that, but I like to acknowledge that we are watching something that at the end of the day is so formulaic and a bit silly.
But that's it. The way it was sold was it was different, but it wasn't. It was just the same. It relied on these tropes that it pretended to turn down.
Yeah.
Like even the name of the film, Cabin in the Woods, is so generic and so nonchalant, it's on the nose, that I think it works for the film because it's so generic, but we're actually not.
Yeah.
And it's just a great film. Like, even Chris Hemsworth, do you know, he obviously went on to do Thor, but he only got the role of Thor because of this film.
Yeah, they filmed it before, didn't they? And then when MGM busted,
he showed them Joss Whedon turn around and showed the dailies to Marvel, obviously, and whoever's in charge at that point, the dailies from that day, and he got that role. And obviously, in the end, Thor got released before Cabin in the Woods. Because there was a big 2-year delay on it, but he only actually exists in that franchise, and then Joss Whedon obviously goes on to direct him again later on, but it's all because of this film.
Yeah.
And I think that shows you there's a strength here.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, there is a strength in acting, and maybe
it
goes
downhill. I don't think it is at all. I think it's just his mates. Like, Joss Whedon just has his mates. It's the same with Abrams. You get these people in Hollywood who just they do something good when they're young.
Yeah.
And then that follows them around for the rest of the career.
Yeah.
Josh Whedon's mates are pretty good, though.
It's like Abrams has dragged his mate to Hollywood when he hasn't
every Adam Sandler film has the exact same four people in it.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Chris Hemsworth is my only note on that film.
He's the main draw. He should be naked more, but once he starts acting like a horny jock, then I'm there for that.
Get a little beer on your shirt? I guess it'll have to come off.
Not here.
Oh, baby, come on. We're all alone.
I'm chilly.
Okay, guys, that's it. Let's go. We got a job to do.
Your basic human needs disgust me. Get out of here.
the black lad's kind of hot in this as well.
Yeah, he's alright.
Really? And actually, the sexiest even for me though is I like the girl giving the going to the wolf.
Oh, that's really horrible. Because the tongue is look, the tongue and the wolf's head looks real.
But that's really sexy. She goes, "Oh, you're talking to me," and she's like doing all sultry and like, I love whenever I watch that scene. You think. I still watch it now thinking it's going to bite her. It's going to bite her. Yeah. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
And even though I know it doesn't, I still watch it thinking it's going to. Because she plays that brilliantly.
Yeah. I like the Evil Dead bit. I like the bit where the trap door flies open. Well, yeah, I think the first time I watched it, I enjoyed it more. The second time, I think it did just feel repetitive and it felt like I've seen all this before. Because I think that's one of my issues with it, actually, is it's a film that sells itself as being...
Different,
and actually no, I've seen that before, because the first half I've seen all that before. Second half is a Buffy episode, isn't it? All the monsters,
it's,
all the big bads.
It's Scream and it's Buffy running together.
Sort of, yeah.
I love Buffy and I love Scream.
So
you're gonna run those two things together.
Yeah.
And I do, but I only managed to write five words of notes. Chris Hemsworth. And two-way mirror.
Yeah.
That's all I managed to write because I was so distracted watching it. And I love Buffy and I love Scream, but I just found it completely unengaging until they went underground. And that sequence towards the end, that sort of caught my attention. And I'm easily pleased with horror. I'm not the sophisticated horror nerds that you are. I'm more of a popular audience who'll be easily pleased by any. I'll shake the throw at me and whatever jumpscares they want to give me, I will lap them up gloriously. And something about horror Cabin in the Woods, it just completely turns me off.
And I think, talking about it now, I think one of the main things is the dialogue is really obsessed with being clever and witty. What it's not obsessed with is making you really love the characters. I think they're saying we're turning all of these people into types, which is part of the point. However, in doing that, you disengage from a bit.
The only person you actually give a lot of credit to is the Sona.
Yeah, and even he just irritates me.
He gets a little bit more.
At the end, I quite liked him at the end. But
are
like
we not
going to
address that the third act show up of Sigourney Weaver is just everything that I needed in life?
Well, yeah, no, that bit, when her voice booms out over the tannoy, I was like, oh, hang on a minute. And then when she turns up, that's really funny. It's really camp.
It's so camp.
And she's like a big scream queen icon. So that was great. And she's really good as well. So that's what I'm saying. I like the ending more than the beginning, really. I think when I first saw it on the cinema, I liked the beginning more than the ending. So I've sort of flipped in the last couple of years. But the beginning's not giving me anything new. But the last half is funny, jumpy, roller coaster ride, Sigourney Weaver. So that works for me.
The actual ending, which I think is maybe divides some people for me, I think it plays perfectly. I think be brave, kill the world off.
Yeah, why
just,
not?
Just destroy everyone. Why
you
not?
You can't have a sequel then either, can you?
Yeah.
Although, the studio did try and request one.
I'm sure they did.
Joss Whedon wouldn't go near that, though.
Was it successful?
No. Well, I don't know. There was
at the film.
It was on one of these...
ticket sales.
Oh, the film was? I don't know how successful it was.
I don't know. It was
probably the Weed Knights probably went to see it.
It was hugely, hugely classically acclaimed, but I don't know if it made that in money.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It probably broke even. I don't think the trailer was right.
You see, if it was a big success, then
it was
we would have a sequel then.
If someone was trying to shop around the sequel, they were trying to... The studio were pitching, could someone... give us a studio to Cabin in the Woods. I'm like, did you not watch the first one? Do you not know how it ends?
It's probably they'd say, all right, then we'll have a prequel.
Yeah.
But I don't think we need it.
No.
One thing I did really like about it was the score was basically stolen from The Descent.
Mm.
Horror nerd, I've always been big on my soundtracks, and I was watching thinking, that's the same. And then I realised it's the same composer. And I think that the soundtrack is actually just like outtakes from The Descent because it's almost exactly the same.
I think it was just sitting on a shelf, so it was just try and release it to make some money off it.
Once again, like Scream, because Scream's entire soundtrack was used in an entire film. The film, I can't remember what the film was.
H2O.
Was it?
Halloween H2O. Scream 2 was used in,
But
yeah, so I really like the music, but that's good. But that just made me want to go watch The Descent.
Which, okay, never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I don't care. I'm going to stick my fingers and go, la, la, la.
Doesn't like The Exorcist.
Yes. Yes, doesn't like The Exorcist, likes Cabin in the Woods. But no, I do like, I enjoy Cabin in the Woods. I just don't think it's as great as you think it is. And
I know. I address the flaws with it at all. I just kind of don't care.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have those comfort films as well, yeah, don't you? That yeah. you just want to watch and enjoy. Like you were talking about Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah, I love that film. It's awful.
You should just enjoy a film because you love it. Well, why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You shouldn't like or hate films just on the basis of what other people think.
Necessarily the quality.
Yeah. Well, that's it, yeah. Yeah, but all
that's the overarching theme of what we've discussed.
Well, that's it, yeah. We can't go into like a podcast episode saying we're talking about the films that we hate that everyone else loves, but then try and change each other's minds. You should like it because I do.
I don't know, I feel like I've come out to this and wanted to, again, even though just recently visited, I want to see Exorcist again, I want to see Channel. Mm. Again, now I've had your points of views, I just don't want to see Dracula again.
No, I don't want to see that again.
No. It's probably all 10 better versions.
Yeah. I just want to watch Buffy again.
Yeah.
I won't watch Cabin in the Woods again. I would watch Buffy again at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. I'll watch them all again.
Anything else spring to mind that you hate that everyone else loves? Go on.
Hands in the Air for Paranormal Activity.
Right.
Because I think it's the worst series that has ever existed.
See, I quite like it.
Right.
I like the first one, the third one, and they did a like spin-off with a fully like Latino cast called The Marked Ones.
Yeah, I didn't make it through though.
I like that one. I really liked it.
They were kind of annoying.
But I hated 2 and 4, and I won't even bother to watch the new one.
Well, I thought 2 was better.
Did you?
The one. I just thought it was the most dire thing I've ever watched. I watched it because I'd heard all the reviews, but the trailer went out and it was one of those trailers where they interview people after they've been to see a film.
Yeah.
Whenever I see a trailer like that, I know I'm not going to like the film.
That's like a throwback to the 70s, isn't it?
Yeah.
I always end up seeing it and thinking, well, these people got paid.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's bad. And it is. I say an hour and a half because I've been thinking of one film, but I've seen like 5.
Didn't the first one have like 10 different endings or something?
Yeah.
It had a few endings, yeah.
So
yeah.
I've watched like good 10 hours of my life has been spent watching this film, and they are bad.
I really like the third one because the two little girls.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah, the two girls in the mirror. Is that that one?
Yeah.
Wait, they're talking about Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
And stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, yeah, that's alright. That
number
bit.
3.
But like the majority of it is just me watching a camera do nothing, expecting something to happen, and nothing does happen 90% of the time.
Yeah.
That 10% of the time where something does happen, I might go,
yeah.
And then I'm over it. And I'm like, so that's not worth an hour and a half of my life.
Yeah.
It's just because they're so cheap to make. Even if, you know, do you make 5 of them, and if even one of them's a hit, they've made the money back for all of them, haven't they?
Yeah.
But every one of them's been a hit.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I want to play a
game. Oh, so, what the fuck? What the fuck's that all about? That's another one of those where it's just like, oh, we're so clever, we're gonna pull the wool over your eyes, but really I'm not interested and I don't care about those characters in the
I didn't mind the first one, but I guess the problem is the first one probably had a good idea and then the studio was like, oh, this was quite a hit, we'll just knock one out every year on Halloween,
and everyone,
the quality dipped drastically from the first one.
The
first one is good.
Well, it became like, and I'm not dissing soap opera, obviously, but it became like a soap. There were storylines going through it about people having affairs and all this, and it was like,
I hated they killed off the main character, like the main villain, but then he was still pulling strings for the next 4.
Yeah.
Because
there
were entries.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Nobody, some of them people, some of them sequels, some of them people sequels. And I'm like, right, whatever. No one is that clever that they can plan 7 different series of murders that are convoluted.
It became like CSI, didn't it? It was like CSI with gore, basically.
It was ridiculous, but
it was just shit.
I do like the way they come up with some inventive ways of killing people.
But that was the torture porn, that was the whole...
Yeah.
I like that in the second one, the woman who's a drug addict going through the needles, that is...
Oh yeah, that's good.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
That's genuinely horrifying. There's like little moments that
I like the one in number 3 where she has to put her hand in a jar of acid to get the key.
Yeah.
Otherwise her chest to be ripped open.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And you know, I'm not sniffing at like horrible deaths, they're great. But
that's all you've got.
If that's all you've got, there's no
narrative, it's just
also resent that it just gave another character for like girls to dress up on as Halloween and just put a bit of circle makeup on the face and think that they're Jigsaw.
Oh, Jigsaw, yeah.
And
yeah.
It just annoys me.
And yeah, and also inspired people like my beloved Madonna to get cheek fillers to look like Jigsaw. Because sometimes she does.
She does.
And I love her, but she does. And so do a lot of other people, Nicole Kidman.
What's even left of her?
Have you seen those meerkats outfits? It's hard to differentiate between them and her.
She's like, just a meerkat.
Like, who do you want to go on a date with, this meerkat or what's left of Nicole Kidman? Probably the meerkat.
I know, and I saw the other day Dead Calm was on TV, and I watched it just for Billy Zane's ass, basically. But she's in that, and it's like 1989, I think, and it's shocking how much she actually has changed since then. Her face is totally different. It's a real shame. Oh well, that brings us to the end. Thanks for listening to that one. What films do you think we should have talked about there? Have you got a classic? Do you hate Alien? Do you hate Amityville Horror? Do you hate Poltergeist? Anything like that? If you want to let us know your views on those films that we've picked tonight, or just chime in generally and tell us what you think of us, or if you want to attack Stephen Moore for not liking The Exorcist, or if you're Francis Ford Coppola and want to sue us, then please email us at screamingqueens@gmail.com or get us on iTunes, leave us a review. Feedback, we need your feedback. We're getting the downloads, which is good. It's nice to know that people are listening to us, but we want to know what you think, so stop being so fucking lazy. But that was great, so thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hello.